As we have come through the Gospels again, going through the book of Luke, I never cease to be amazed, or I always have to remind myself of the ignorance of the disciples on the big picture of what Jesus was doing and what his agenda truly was. They wanted Revelation 19 and they wanted it now. And you know what? We want the same thing. We're not that far off from them. We want all the problems to go away. We want all the bills to be paid. We want all the health and full in our life. We want all our relational problems to go away. We don't want any conflict with anybody. We want rest. We want peace. And we want it all now. And we want God. We want to be able to go up to God and put our dollar in and push our button and get out that. We want a vending machine for a God. And the disciples weren't that much different. And they had listened to Jesus talk for 3 years. They believed the Old Testament prophets. They believed he was the Messiah. And they had this picture of Jesus coming in on a white horse like Revelation 19 and just riding into Rome or Jerusalem and setting everything right. And their lives were just going to be hunky-dory from now on. And they would be in charge because they'd gone with him. Judas wasn't the only one that thought this way. He thought he was going to be the head of the Department of the Treasury, you know, the Bussar of the world. He wasn't the only one. James and John were no different. And there was a time when Mama came. Beware of mamas who think they have to go to bat for their boys. Here's James and John, two of the inner circle. You got Peter, James, and John. They're the ones that get to do all the special stuff with Jesus. They're the ones that went to the Mount of Transfiguration. And here's James and John, two of the three, probably younger. You know, Peter's mama, you know, probably didn't need to. He was a little older, a little saltier. But, you know, I think she's probably, Mrs. Zebedee's a little worried that Jesus is going to overlook her precious darlings when it would come time to set up the kingdom. And she had ideas for them. And so in another gospel, in another place, it's Mrs. Zebedee who actually goes up to Jesus and says, what exactly cabinet positions do you have in mind for my darlings, for my precious ones, for James and John? And the other disciples were really ticked at James and John because Mrs. Zebedee did this. Well, that seemed to be in another time, but there's also this incident found here in the Gospels, very close to with the Lord's table and the betrayal and Peter, the conflict we will see, and going to the Garden of Gethsemane, all these things. There seems to be a conflict here on the way, and so it says there was a dispute among them, verse 24 says, as to which of them should be the greatest. And we look at this knowing that within 24 hours, Jesus is going to be betrayed. He's going to be abused. He's going to be crucified. And they're wondering which one gets the biggest piece of the pie. And there's some, you know, it's easy for us to look at this and go, ooh, what's wrong with you? You know, 3 years you think you'd gotten it by now. But I propose to you that we're not a whole lot different. We want a title. I think sometimes people like little churches because there's enough titles to go around for everyone. I'm the song leader at the Southside Baptist Church. I'm the Sunday school superintendent, and there's enough titles for everybody to go around. One of the things that happen in a church our size is all the normal titles are filled, and so people think there's nothing to do. There is this wicked desire in us to be recognized. And now, ladies and gentlemen, front and stage, you know, it's got to be me. I'm the one that should, you know, get this probably. And so there's this desire inside of us, and that's my first point this morning. We naturally desire position and power. We naturally desire position and power. And that's what happened here. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles, this is what normal people, everybody else out there do. They exercise lordship over the people, and those who exercise the authority of them are called benefactors. They're called the ones who give out good stuff. Yeah, I want to be the guy who signs the check. I want to be the guy that people look to and say, this is the boss. This is the guy that's in charge. When Linda and I landed in Liberia, we thought we had gone into something that was run by Al Capone. We landed in an airport, was taken into a room where all the trim was done in 2x4s that had been painted about 50 times. It was old stuff, and we were hustled, she and I were, into a room, and there was this old desk that came out of a 1940 schoolhouse, I'm just sure of it. And on the other side of the desk were two men in uniform, one guy with a lot of medals and one guy with a few. And they proceeded to tell us that they were glad we were in Liberia. And then about every minute or two, the one guy said, and this is my boss, and this is my... And they were waiting for me to... And I was stupid. I didn't know what was going on. They were waiting for me to compliment the boss with green stuff so that we would get our luggage through. And then all of a sudden, one of the pastors realized that they had sequestered us away and came in. And, no, we already took... They'd already bribed them. We already took care of that, remember? And so we were delivered from that. But there was just... as an American, I was aghast that this guy thought, just because this guy had a lot of medals on his uniform, that he assumed that I would know that I should give him money. And it's completely foreign to me. I haven't bribed a police officer for a long time. It just... You know, we don't think about that here, but I would propose to you that there is inside of us. Jesus says this is the way the Gentiles behave. They've got people in charge, and the people in charge are able to give stuff to other people, and they call them benefactors. They say, oh, you're the one that gives us the support. You're the one that from you flows out. And how many false religions have this idea that the guy in charge is able to give us things? The children today... what does it mean to be great? Oh, he's the guy. And I think there is in us. Who is great? This is the guy that can do things. He's the guy that can make things happen. And Jesus says this is the natural indication. This is the natural way we are. An incident from when we were selling fireworks at the Oshkosh Walmart a year and a half ago now. And there was a couple that came up. And this guy obviously was a spoiled little rich kid. He had a sports car that was well beyond the means of anybody his age, and his girlfriend he was obviously impressing, and they reeked of too much money, you know. And they came in and acted like they could buy the whole tent, and they bought some sparklers, I think. And I gave them their change, and when I gave him his change, and he walked out, and he got ready to put his change in his pocket. And he just threw the change in the parking lot and went on. And that just, it angered me. He despised carrying that coinage in his pocket. And he threw it on the ground, and I could just, almost hear my wife say, now who's going to pick that up, to our kids? Who do you think's going to pick that up? Huh? But there was in him that certain arrogance that said, I am too big to carry this change, so I'll throw it on the parking lot floor, and I don't care who does or who doesn't pick that up. A certain arrogance that we have, a certain authority that we think we need, and there is this inside of us, and I think we need to recognize this very natural human attribute. But Jesus changes it in verse 26. He says, don't let this be like this among you. Catch the huge thing. He says, this is what is natural. This is what everybody else in the world is going to do. But not among you guys. This is not the way you're supposed to think. And Jesus then, if I could put this verse 26 in my words, I would say like this, the second point today. The greatest among us are those who submit and serve the greatest cause. You want to be great? Then sell your soul to a cause that's great. You want to be great? Then serve. The take on that attitude, and the word here is not the doulos, is not the bond slave. For those of you who have listened to me preach over the years, you know that in the Greek, I believe the word doulos is a relational word. It has to do with being a slave to someone. The word here is the diakonos, it's the deacon thing. And it's the idea of being a servant or being a slave to a mission. That there's a project involved here. It's not necessarily that there's someone that I serve, but I serve. I serve. I serve because there's a cause. Let me read the words of Jesus in verse 26. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be the younger, the one without authority. And he who governs as he who serves. Do you know who should be president of the United States in November? It is the one of the candidates that would be the best servant. The best servant of God, the best servant of the laws of the United States, the best servant of what is right for the American people, and even the best servant perhaps of the American people. That's who ought to be president, and that's for whom you should vote. There, I just did what you should never do in church. I just told you for whom to vote. Vote for he who you would determine, or she, that would be the best servant. Because that's what Jesus says. That he who is among you, this is what you should be, as he who serves. For who is greater, Jesus says? He who sits at the table or he that serves? Of course, it's the guy who sits. That's the guy that's in charge. That's the guy, the benefactor, that gets to give stuff to other people, that gets to tell other people where to put it. This is the one. And Jesus says, yet I'm the one that serves. And we know from the other Gospels that just before this, he's gotten down on his hands and knees and washed their feet with his hands and taken the crud of the day off their feet in a basin of water. He did that 12 times. And imagine what the slosh on his robe, imagine what his hands, but he did that. He was their servant. He says, I'm the servant. When Moses died, God comes to Joshua in Joshua chapter 1. Remember what he says? Joshua, Moses, the greatest leader of all times, is dead. Is that what he said? Did God say, Joshua, the great and wise, the meekest man who's ever lived, Moses, he has died? Did he say Moses, the prophet? Did he say Moses, the lawgiver? All these things would have been true about Moses. But what did God tell Joshua? What did God call Moses when he addressed Joshua? He said, Moses, my servant, has died. He could have said a lot of other things, but Moses was to God his servant. And that was the high calling to which Moses was called and that God directed towards Joshua. Here's the pattern, Joshua. If you want to be great, if you want to be great like Moses was great, then know this, that this man was my servant. I looked in the concordance and looked at other people who were called, that God said, this is my servant. They are many. Abraham was called my servant, Caleb my servant, David my servant, Job my servant, Isaiah my servant, and probably most importantly in the prophecies of Isaiah, Jesus is called my servant. Jeremy stole my thunder, but it was so obvious this morning in the idea of servanthood to take the song that Ben and Amy sang for us. And see what Jesus Christ did for us. Was he not a servant? Come with me to Ephesians chapter 5, and this is the passage where we speak about men and husband and wife relationships. And of course, in Ephesians 5:21, he says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Come to me down to verse 25, and I'm not going to talk about husbands and wives here. I want you to see how Paul uses Jesus Christ as a servant. He's addressing husbands, and so it says, husbands, love your wives. But now look what he says about Jesus. Just as Christ also loved the church, this is what love looks like. He gave himself for her. He's a servant. That he might, here's the agenda of the servant, this is the duty, this is how he deaconed, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. This was the agenda of Jesus Christ. This is why he washed the feet of Peter and the disciples. This is why he went to the cross. This is why he bore my sins. Think of it. He served my sin debt. He was willing to take that on himself, all of my sin. What a servant attitude. Any wonder Paul will write in Philippians, "Let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus, who being in the very image of God, the very likeness of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took upon himself the pattern, the likeness of a servant, of a servant." And he served that cause, and he has an agenda for the cause, that we, the Church of Jesus Christ, might be holy, that we might be blameless. And so he serves us. So today, he labors for us. Jesus Christ is our servant. Would you want to be a servant? If you were up here this morning, would you want to be a servant? Moses, my servant, is dead. Joshua, it's your time to serve. Jesus served the church. He serves us. Would you want to be a servant? And I think about there were two names that jumped out at me, and think about them. Abraham and David, as I went through with the concordance on the computer and saw the people who were called my servant. Abraham and David, you know what's interesting about those guys? Both of them were called my servant, and you know what the other thing that God called them? My friend. I would propose to you that those two things go together. Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." How do you demonstrate love? You demonstrate love by obedience, by service. You demonstrate love by being a servant. Yesterday, Dave and Rhea Briscoe emphasized the fact that one of the key things that ruin marriages is selfishness. That if we would have a good marriage, that we must be a selfless marriage. And boy, that cuts across all of us, because I like me a lot. And I like my wife to like me. And I like her to think about me. And if I'm going to have a great marriage, I've got to be a servant. And if you're thinking right now, "I sure hope my spouse is listening," then you're not getting it. Because I can't make Lynn serve me. I can make me be a servant. Piece of trash on the floor. What you gonna do about it? You know, somebody should pick that up. It's just a little thing to stop in the hallway at school, or stop in the hallway at church, or in the home, or you know, on your walk and pick up a piece of trash. And I'm not saying you're spiritual if you pick up trash and you're not spiritual if you don't pick up trash. I'm just using it as an illustration, okay? Why don't we pick that up? Well, in some of our cases, it's because we can't. But you know, in my case, I probably need to. Why don't we pick that up? Because quite frankly, it's beneath us. That's why. Because somebody else should take care of that. Probably someplace they're paying somebody to pick up this street, and so why should I take a job away from somebody, you know? And we reason away of not being a servant. Do you know what you are when you are an usher at Trinity Baptist Church? You get to wear a pin now. You know, you're somebody important. You got pin power. And we put a pin on you, and you stand back there. You know what that pin designates? You have the privilege of being the servant of the service. Think about that. It's your job to make sure visitors find a comfortable place to sit. It's your job to make sure that if people come in during the music service, that you might hand them the book that you've been singing out of, open to the page because you've been singing along, right? And right? And hand them the book you've been singing out of. And that when a visitor comes in and they got, you know, 15 little kids and they look completely lost, you get to be the one to help them. You are the designated. We can all do that. We don't need a pin to be a servant. Do you know what you get to be when you get to be a nursery worker? You get to be the servant. You get to serve Pastor Leeds by making sure the auditorium is not disrupted by a baby to which we'd all rather listen to than me anyway. You listen to you. You serve me and you serve a mom. Every mom with a baby that is in the nursery right now, you are serving her if you are a nursery worker. And ultimately, of course, we serve the Lord Jesus Christ. To find a cause, you know, one of the most important things you can, I think, for being on sports, and Mike Marshall talked about that, and the military is the same thing. There is in both team sports and also in the military, there is that aspect that I'm part of something that's bigger. I'm part of a cause that is greater. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the antithesis of our sinful nature. We want to be the star. We want to be the person in charge. We want the attention. That is natural. But Christian, if we would be like Jesus, is serving. And yes, this is a sermon that I regularly preach in our school chapel. I bet I've preached this sermon 4 or 5 times in the years that I've been pastor of this church. But you know what? We all need this sermon, and we all need this sermon on a regular basis, because there is something inside of all of us that wants to be the power. We want to be the epitome. We want to be the top. And we want other people to know that we are the benefactor, that we are the top. Jesus says, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Do you know someone who's gracious? Just kindness comes out of them. Love comes out of them. Do you know why you feel that way around them? It's because they serve. It's because their heart is trying to make it better for you. Whether it be in their speech. You know what manners are and respect is? In our culture seems to, that was drilled in, pounded in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. You know, where are your manners? You know, show respect. You know what underlies that? You don't have to teach a person manners or teach a person respect if they have a heart to serve. That's what we need. We need a Christ-like spirit inside of us that wants to make it pleasant for someone else, that wants to make it easier for someone else, that wants to be a servant of a cause, of serving their fellow man, of serving those around them, and ultimately, of course, serving the Lord Jesus Christ. And Jesus says there's rewards for this. I look down in verse 28 and following, and this doesn't follow in all the texts, but I think the Holy Spirit probably had something in mind when he put it here in Luke right after this. But there's a conjunction, you are those. He says, now I've just told you that the best thing in the world that you can possibly be, the one we should give the most attention to, the person who's truly the greatest, that's the one that acts like the youngest. It's the one that serves other people. And then he does this conjunction, but you. I'm going to contrast a little bit. There's something a little bit different here. Now he's not going to be talking about service per se, but he says this, but you are those who have continued with me in my trials. And I bestow upon you a kingdom. Yeah, we get to be part of the team. As my Father bestowed upon one upon me, that you might eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes. This is what faithful servant, and my third point is God rewards faithful service. And notice what the faithful servant gets. You get a relationship with Jesus Christ. If you're the servant, you get to be close to the boss because you got the heart of the boss. If you're a servant, you also end up with authority, with responsibility. Notice it says, sits on thrones judging. In trying to think of a story to close with today, I thought of the story in Genesis 24. There was Abraham, and he needs a wife for his son Isaac. And so he pulls to him his servant. I think probably it's a man named, earlier in the text, a man named Eliezer. It might not have been the same guy. Many years have gone by, but perhaps it was the same guy. And it says of this man in Genesis 24:2 that he ruled over everything that Abraham had. Now, if you're familiar at all with the Genesis story, Abraham was rich. richness in those days was marked by cattle, and Abraham had flocks and herds and servants who watched over the flocks and herds and men servants and women servants and tents, and he at one time muscled up an army of several hundred men. And so this is the kind of power that Abraham had. In his culture, he was a big man, and he had a servant who, it says, ruled over everything that he had. And he said, I want you to go, my servant Eliezer, if that's who it was, and I want you to go go over to Laban's house and find a wife for my daughter, for my son Isaac, for Isaac my son. And gave him some directions, and so Isaac, names are, Eliezer takes off. Isaac is the son. He stays home. Eliezer takes off, and he heads over to Laban's house. And there's this girl out by the well, and as these thirsty camels show up, Eliezer gets this idea. I'm going to walk up to this well, and I'm going to say to the first person I meet, can I have a drink? Would you please draw me a drink of water? Just coming off the desert here. And whoever she is, if she says, not only will I draw you a drink, but those camels that you have behind you that have come across the desert and are probably incredibly thirsty, I will use this stone pot and I will stand here and draw water into the trough until all your camels are done drinking. He says, the woman who does that is the one that I think you'll probably have for me to be, take back to my master to be his son Isaac's wife. And so he comes up there. And he sees this pretty young lady named Rebecca. And as God would have it, she was a descendant of Abraham's relatives. And as God would have it, she was an unmarried girl, a virgin girl. And but here's this pretty lady. With later it says she's beautiful. And he says to her, may I have a drink? And remember what she says? Just like God answered Eliezer's prayer. She says, I'll not only draw you something to drink, but see that caravan behind you? I'll draw for all them too. And she proceeds to draw water for all of them. I think there's two people here that are interesting. Number one is Eliezer. What did he look like when he showed up that day? I would propose to you that he looked powerful. He had gold. He had camels. He had other servants. Why did he have all those things, all that power? Because he was Abraham's servant. He was a servant of the rich man. And you and I. If you want to make a difference in this world, be a servant. There's plenty of people wanting to be in charge. Be a servant. Have a heart that says there's a project and I'm going to enslave myself to the project. I'm going to take on this cause, this Christianity, this thing, this doing the right thing. I'm going to take this on. I'm going to serve. I'm going to throw my effort. I'm not going to worry about anything else. I'm going to serve. I'm going to be a servant. Take on that spirit. And what was the end result of that? Eliezer, he's rich. He's powerful because he's a servant of the king. He's a servant of Abraham. But there's a second picture here, of course, that's important. And that Rebecca's character, who she really was deep inside, was not revealed by her beauty, was not revealed by her lineage, was revealed by her heart, her willingness to let sweaty, stinky camels have all they wanted to drink. Are we servants? I asked the kids this morning, are there any servants in your house? And of course, what Joey Kiro meant, Joe, that you know, is that you don't have any hired employees at your place. Nobody comes in, little maid for you with little aprons on and cleans your house for you. That would be nice. Tammy would appreciate that if you would do it someday. But I asked them, are there any servants at the Kiro home? And Joe said, no. Are there any servants in your house? Are there any servants in your marriage? Are Are there any servants in our church?